Good morning, go ahead and be seated. Okay, the next case we have on calendar is docket number 63372, In Re Parental Rights as to GLK. Are we ready to proceed on that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, Ms. Young. Pardon?
Do you prefer the podium?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Shane Jasmine Young, bar number 9457, and I am pro bono counsel for the appellant, Mr. Sean Kelly, who is here today. This is an appeal of a district court order entered on May 23, 2013, terminating the parental rights of the appellant, Mr. Kelly, regarding his only child, the subject minor, Gracie. We have three issues that are presented on the appeal, which are related, as you can imagine. Number one, did the district court err by finding that appellant was an unsuitable parent based on failure of parental adjustment, token efforts, unfitness, neglect, and presumptions of NRS 128.109? Number two, did the district court err by failing to temporarily or permanently place Gracie with her parental grandmother, who is also here today, as an alternative to foster care and or terminating appellant's rights? And three, did the district court err by determining that the best interests of Gracie would be served by terminating appellant's rights and allowing Gracie to be placed for adoption? Gracie was born in June 2011 to parents who suffered from drug addiction. In December of 2011, when Gracie was 6 months old, she was placed in foster care. 10 months later, in October 2012, respondent filed a petition to terminate parental rights, which my client opposed. On April 17, 2013, the natural mother relinquished her parental rights. The next day, on April 18, 2013, the court held a trial and granted the petition to terminate appellant's rights, and her foster and Gracie's foster parents subsequently adopted Gracie. It's my understanding that the natural mother has remained in contact with Gracie's adoptive family since that time and has received the opportunity to visit and receive photos and updates regularly from them. Appellant is here today to seeking to overturn the district court's ruling based on the court's failure to meet the high standard and scrutiny, which resulted in the severance of a very fundamental legal right, which is to be a parent to his child. The standard of review in these cases requires that clear and convincing evidence be established before terminating parental rights. As stated in the Smith v. Smith case cited in our opening brief, termination of parental rights is an exercise of awesome power. In addition, the severance of the parent-child relationship is, quote, tantamount to imposition of a civil death penalty, end quote, as this court has explained in Drury v. Lange. In this case, the district court's termination was not supported by clear and convincing evidence. The grounds for terminating parental rights are set forth in NRS 128.105 and 128.109. With respect to NRS 128.105, the court's determination to terminate appellant's rights based on token efforts, failure of parental adjustment, neglect, and unfitness was improper. As a preliminary matter, the presumption in the state of Nevada is that the best interest of the child is to be placed with the family in her family's custody under NRS 125.480 and NRS 125.500 subsection 1. And the district court is required to find that awarding custody to a parent would be detrimental to the child.
Well, this was all based, primarily based on their inability to effectively parent because of their drug abuse. And that was a continual problem for both of them. And I understand the mother voluntarily agreed to the termination. But, you know, I'm struggling to see...
Well, Your Honor,
because the best interest of the child then is always the issue.
Yes, and I understand that.
And safety and welfare.
Right, and in this case, while Gracie was in foster care and the case was pending, my client was moving forward with the case plan that the district court had put into place. He was in rehab. He was maintaining his sobriety. He was working towards all of the goals that were set as far as the case plan was concerned. But when it came to the trial, and we had testimony from his counselor at the Drug Rehabilitation Center that said, you know, he was doing great. He was on the right path. He had changed his lifestyle. He was making necessary adjustments so that he could come out of rehab and be a proper parent to Gracie. All of that evidence and testimony was presented to the district court, and unfortunately it seemed as though the state just wanted to move forward with terminating his rights, since the rights of the mother were already terminated and Gracie had been placed in a foster.
So this would have been at the time of the termination trial in April of 2013?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and at that time your client had been arrested and in lieu of jail been offered a residential treatment plan, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and the...
which he did complete. He completed his rehabilitation just, I think it was 2 months or so after the case, after the trial.
I guess the underlying question, and it's really a philosophical question for us, you know, I applaud Mr. Kelly for his efforts as to his substance abuse that began really very early in his life. But nonetheless, the child had been out of been away from him for 14 to 20 months, about 16 months prior to it going to termination. When is enough enough as we look at the best interest of the child? That's our consideration. And this one's a very difficult case because on the edge, Mr. Kelly is now stable. But we've gone through this and we have a legislative presumption of unfit parent when the child is out of the household. And without wanting to bludgeon Mr. Kelly, we have these issues and it's a difficult process to get clean, so to speak, but the child being placed with the grandmother, using a substance in the home when he was not supposed to be in the home, which is why he was taken from the grandmother. The child was taken from the grandmother. We have all these interplays. So how do we speak to this issue of the court, the state attempting to allow for reunification, but this time period? When is enough enough? How do we deal with that in light, in this case, in the particular facts?
Yes, I understand your point, Your Honor. And to answer, to respond to that, it seems as though as the case was progressing, you know, Gracie was just 6 months old when she was taken out of the Kelly's home. It was just 10 months later that the state had filed a petition to terminate rights. Now, I believe that that's premature. That was premature.
Also, counsel, the child was removed and a termination and a plan for reunification was put into place. The termination didn't come into play until way down the road.
Until April of 2013.
As I said, the child had been out of the control of father and grandmother for particularly for 14 out of 20 months, and then by the time we got to trial, it was 16 months.
Yes, Your Honor. It was just it's a difficult situation because at the time that Gracie was removed from the home and placed into foster care, Mr. Kelly was struggling with drug addiction.
Does the child even know him?
She does. During the time she was having regular visits, he was making his weekly visits, he was attending events, they were building a father-daughter bond. Since the order, it's been about 2 years since Mr. Kelly has have been able to have any contact with Gracie. Despite his efforts, he's reached out multiple times to the adoptive family. He's made informal and formal attempts to be at least have some sort of visitation and be in his child's life. He didn't want to disrupt her life. because he understands that she was taken as a baby, and that family has been caring for her. She's been in the custody of the same family since she was taken.
And they want a doctor.
Yeah, they have a doctor.
They have a doctor, yes.
Now, what about the mother, the biological mother? I think you said something about she has certain rights with the child, or what's going on there, and why can't he have the same rights?
That's a good question, Your Honor. She relinquished her rights prior to the trial, but she has maintained a relationship with the adoptive family, is my understanding. She has regular contact with the adoptive mother. She's been able to see Gracie, visit with her. She gets pictures. She gets updates on Gracie's progress. Gracie understands, I believe she understands, that her adoptive family is her family, but she, the natural mother, is still able to be able to visit.
And that's at the option of the adoptive family.
Yes, Your Honor. And I really don't understand why a similar arrangement couldn't have been made with my client. He did try. He made several attempts.
Have you tried as an attorney to contact the adoptive family to see what their position is?
I did. It's been several months since I've been in contact with them. The last contact that I did have with the adoptive mother, I explained my client's position, that he would like to at least have some sort of visitation with Gracie. She had said that basically that she had some issues with the natural mother, going back and forth on and off drugs, and she didn't want to confuse Gracie and expose her to things that would be harmful to her. And I tried to assure her that my client was not in the same position as the natural mother, that they were no longer in a relationship. They were living separate lives. He was maintaining his sobriety so that he could have some contact with his daughter and be not be a negative influence, but be a positive influence on her life. But unfortunately, the adoptive mother, she said she would consider it and she would discuss it with her husband, and ultimately they declined.
It puts us in a real tough position, especially when the adoption's already occurred.
Yes.
And the child has roots with the adoptive family. And our position on foster care is not, we look at it, we look at it with the type of eye that we would prefer the child to be adopted than to be in foster care. Because once they go from foster care, and if it doesn't work out, it's foster care to foster care. Mm-hmm. And when I was on the district court, I really didn't pay much attention to pre-sentence reports until I got involved with Justice Seda, who was a district court judge. And she said to me, take a look at the PSIs, the pre-sentence reports, on the number of people that have been in foster care. Mm-hmm. So we got a system that's not the best. And now, we also, when a person is a drug user and then has a plan but doesn't follow the plan and just makes token efforts, puts us in another bad position. So please understand. I'm hoping maybe that I don't know which way we're going to vote on this, but if it doesn't work out Mr. Kelly, that he try to do something to work with the adoptive family. That's all I could say. I don't mean to editorialize, but That's the story on these cases. I'm anxious to hear what the state's going to say.
Yes.
And you have 2 minutes left if you want to save some time.
Would you like to save rebuttal time?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Thank you. Justices, Jen Kim on behalf of the state. Justice Douglas noted, when is enough enough? Justice Peregrine asked, what about the best interest of the child? Gracie Lynn was 6 months old when removed from the natural parents. She was born substance exposed. A safety plan was initially put in place, and the child remained with the parents as long as they agreed to comply with the case plan and to remain sober. They started relapsing and immediately violating that safety plan. In August of 2011, the appellant signed up for drug court. In September, he was testing numerous times for poly substances. The parents then went and got high at the McDonald's. They took turns using heroin in the bathroom with Gracie outside.
Counsel, I guess part of the problem is, because a lot of these we're dealing with these days based upon the society is based upon drug use, there's no magic bullet for when a person is going to, if they in fact defeat the demons of substance abuse. So I query this presumption and the department's position, yes, it took him a little longer to get a handle on it, but I guess I'm looking at the plan, and ultimately we kind of come to at the end of this is a position that even though he is semi-stable because it's a day-to-day affair as to his substance abuse, it's quoted that he doesn't have a place to live or employment and things like that to take care of the minor child. So I guess part of my concern is if this is something that the department is looking at as a requirement for him to be reassociated with his daughter, why that's not part of the plan. If we're going to set up this trap door, so to speak, at the end, why is this not considered at the beginning that employment skills or other things be considered in his plan, if you know?
Okay. Justice, to address what the justice is asking, in an affirm order to reunify the stability in the home, employment, those things that can be achieved once a person reaches sobriety. Primary focus of this case plan, and it wasn't an onerous one, two objectives: remain sober, do drug treatment.
Well, counsel, having been involved for some time looking at the court's drug court and outpatient treatment, as I said, this is not just something you, like taking an aspirin and you get over it. Some people are able to kick it, some people aren't, some people relapse and takes a while before they finally come around. But then we talk about this is, as counsel reasserted, reminded us, this is the death penalty of for a parent. We are terminating the rights. We are terminating association with this child.
That's true. And as Justice Cherry noted, it's about the best interest of the child. 128-109, the presumptions were written to mirror PASPA guidelines.
And I've been querying the last few days even more and more, is it in the best interest of the child to be separated from their family heritage
and
in long term?
Absolutely. And if I may, the 128-109 presumptions were written, and the Supreme Court has acknowledged in the DRH that it is a reflection of public policy that children should not adrift indefinitely in foster care while the parents are addressing their issues that brought the children into care.
Counselor, I would propose for you, much as I pose for myself, would I have been better off in foster care never knowing the history of my own family than being allowed to know the history of my family and to be associated with it?
And
that ultimately is my concern as I voice this. I understand what the legislators enacted, and I understand our requirements to follow to a certain degree, but I put that question forward today because it's something that's beginning to nag me as I see it, especially in our society and culture that's has a lot of folks who have been addicted to some form of substance, whether it be illegal substance or legal substance taken illegally these days.
Yes, Justice. The district court does not take terminations lightly. In this instance, as the parent progresses in their case plan, TPRs can be delayed, given more time, compelling efforts can be given, compelling reasons to delay the TPR can be granted in court, but that depends on the parent's willingness to engage. Here, the father was given the case plan in August, and he did not go into inpatient or do any drug treatment between September of 2011 and until his
also
arrest.
So when you're a drug user, that is outside of your control at the time you're originally given your plan.
And once the child is in care, the first year is focused on the parent trying to make those adjustments to be able to safely reunify. When it becomes clear the safe reunification is not possible, after 14 months, it becomes the focus to ensure permanency for an infant child. In this instance, Gracie spent 17 months of her life in foster care. That's her lifetime. And at such a young age, bonding, stability, identifying with parents, that bond becomes crucial to emotional, psychological development. Here, there was limited bond with the parent. In the Ms. Ensign, the paternal grandmother's testimony during the trial, she noted and that the child would cling to the foster mom during the visits. She also acknowledged that the child initially did not recognize her father because of his actions and inactions.
And counsel, I appreciate that position in terms of psychologically what it does to a child, but likewise the other studies show that the child at the later age when they discover they have been adopted and they want to find out so to speak, who their roots were or what their roots were. It's another psychological trauma. So we have these conflicting traumas that are coming at each other that we're looking at, and we quite often get, looking at the child's best interest, quite often when we have, as Justice Cherry talked about, very good individuals who are foster parents who want to adopt, which, thank God for them, we start putting their interest above the natural parent.
The primary goal is the best interest of Gracie, and she gratefully bonded and stabilized. And what she chooses to do in the future in terms of reaching out to her biological father, with grateful forming of bonds, with emotional development, she'll be able to overcome those. Now, in addressing what the concern was and why mom gets visits and the father didn't, the natural mother prior to the TPR agreed to relinquish her parental rights because at that time she recognized her ongoing drug use, her relationship with the appellant. She recognized the best interest of Gracie was to be adopted by Kara Lee and Noah, who had been in care of Gracie for 17 months. She did something called an open adoption agreement, which allowed her to have contact with the child contractually if she relinquished her parental rights so she can continue that relationship. The same offer was made to the appellant. He declined. The condition of the natural mother having continued contact
also,
with her.
Also, do we as a state want to get in a position of almost extorting compliance?
Justice, it is not an extortion.
If you don't agree to a termination, we're not going to ever let you do anything?
She could have gone to trial, but she recognized.
Well, I'm asking based upon what the state did. Is this an extortion situation? You're saying because she voluntarily, quote, after gave up rights, where someone said, no, I'm going to fight. Why is that not extortion by the state?
In Cernica versus Ehrlich, this court said, what depth would a parent have for their love for their child and to do what's in the best interest of the child? The natural made that choice. She believed the best interest for her child, and with love, relinquished. And the condition of her continuing to see her child was based on sobriety. Now, counsel for the appellant said, well, you know, 2 months later he finishes his inpatient, and inferring that, in fact, he was successful. February of this year, he was reordered into inpatient. The adoptive mother would not agree to allow him to continue to have contact when he was still struggling with his substance abuse. He began his substance abuse at the age of 11. At trial, he testified he had never been sober for more than 2 weeks outside of treatment. He was 25 then, 13 years of drug addiction with no abatement. The only reason he entered, as Justice Peregrino noted, is because he was arrested after his drug buddies robbed his home of some stuff. At that time, he was running from the courts, not doing his substances, and according to his testimony, using daily up until his arrest. He went into inpatient with the threat of imprisonment, not for Gracie. And he continued to struggle well afterwards. Mom, remaining sober, maintaining that relationship because she knew she needed help and would not be able to provide Gracie the care that she needed in the immediate future. That child needed that bonding and family immediately. It had been 17 months her entire life. Now, the argument is, well, why couldn't they have alternatively placed with the paternal grandmother? As Justice Peregrine noted, we did. We had to remove because father was living in that home, continuing to use around the child, and he acknowledges such at the TPR. I said, what are your symptoms when you're under the influence? Is it pretty obvious? Yes. I bounce off the wall. I can't focus. He can't parent. At that time,
counsel,
grandmother.
You and I appreciate it's a factual recitation of what occurred. I don't deny that. I guess the ultimate question that we have involved in that, and that is, why was the individual in this case not extended because he finally got a grip, and the grip is day-to-day, as you're indicating, additional time in the plan? Was it the fact that we had foster parents who were willing to adopt, or was it just the feeling that he would not be able to parent the child in the child's best interest?
Exactly as you said, Justice, at the trial, biological father admitted that November 2012, mere 4 months before TPR, he said to CPS, I can't take care of Gracie. I can't even take care of myself. On March of 2013, 1 month before trial, he said to the same caseworker, I'm not going to be okay anytime soon. I can't take care of her. I'm not okay. 1 day before trial, he still wasn't able to articulate an ability or the way to care for the child because he was still an inpatient, only 2 months into sobriety. And his note, although the letter said he was making progress, the report that was more detailed, that's page 346 through 347 of the appendix, noted that his progress was mediocre at best, fair acknowledgement of being truthful and honest, poor as when it came to insight, poor when it came to support. He had just been in treatment only 2 months, only with the threat of incarceration because of the chaotic lifestyle that he had chose to live, his actions and inactions. He was using daily, and his drug buddies robbed his home. That was his choice. His baby girl was in foster care, and he admitted she was doing great in foster care. Carol Lee was doing great with her. And here, the paternal grandmother acknowledged that baby was clinging to her foster mother during the visits because it's the only home she's known. Because of his actions and inaction, 17 months into the case, he was using daily prior to his arrest, and his progress was mediocre at best. When we have case plan progress and there are moments of sobriety and earnest effort towards case plan, the district court has the discretion to give them more time. By the time we went to trial, his testimony was, I can't provide for this kid. I can't be a parent. I can barely take care of me. The paternal grandmother chose to keep him in the home, minimizing and enabling his drug use because she was still parenting her 25-year-old child. The paternal grandmother was parenting her 25-year-old, and there was no room in that home for father, his drug use, the hoarding, the disorganized home, the chaos, and the minimizing and enabling of the appellant's drug use. That is not a home for a child. And he, in the moment of clarity and honesty in November of 2012, said, I can't care for her because I can't take care of me. That was the true moment of honesty. 1 month before trial, same thing, because he'd been using since he was 11. We are grateful that we had an adoptive resource who waited and fostered and loved and still keeps that family connection. The reason the adoptive resource is not willing to still foster that bond or relationship with the appellant is because until this year he was still struggling with drug use. How do you expose a baby to that? The confusion. She needs to know her family. And she had that with Kara, Lee, and Noah. And we're grateful when kids don't have to languish and adrift in foster care because we have people who are willing to step up, foster that relationship, agree to adoptive resources, as long as with the open adoption that the mom remains sober. But that's at their election now as to the appellant. That will be up to him. They made that commit to mom because mom stepped up and did what she needed to do, and she made that decision, which must be so difficult for a mom to say, I know what's best for my child, and it's not me and my boyfriend. This baby needs permanency. And she did something that most parents, when it comes to knowing the depths of their love, she knew what was best for that child. It was hard for the appellant. During the trial, he acknowledged, that's what she believes. I don't agree. But then his actions continued to show that, in fact, the biological mother was correct in taking her actions to ensure stability and a long-lasting home for that child.
Colleagues, any other questions?
Nothing further by me.
Thank you very much. Okay, Ms. Young, you've got about 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. As you can see with how the events took place, my client was really backed into a corner when it came to the decision with respect to Gracie and her placement with a foster home. He had a choice. He could give away his rights, and as the natural mother did, and agree to an open adoption, or he could fight for his rights as a father. And we should applaud his efforts to want to be there, to want to be a father to his child. Instead, he's been punished for fighting for his child.
The question the state seems to hang their hat on, and the quandary for us is, at that moment in time, what was the best interest of the child?
Your Honor.
His efforts and his ability to take care of himself, but more importantly, his ability to take care of that child.
Yes, Your Honor, and it takes time. We've all recognized, all of us in this room, understand if someone has suffered for years, as the state has pointed out, for years with drug abuse, it's going to take time to rehabilitate. He was on that path. He was doing wonderful. He was meeting the case plan. He still had some time to complete the program, which took place after the trial was over. But the efforts to rehabilitate himself at that point cannot be said to be token. The district court found that it was basically too little too late, unfortunately, for my client. But that cannot be the standard when we have these fundamental rights at stake. Now, you brought up a good point, Justice Douglas. Yes, maybe it was in the best interest at the time for Gracie to be placed in a home that was stable. My client admits that he was unstable at that time. He was working towards stability. What happens in 10 years, 5 years, when Gracie says, well, why am I in this home and not with my natural father? And she hasn't had the opportunity to know him and know that he really did fight for her. What if she grows up saying, oh, my parents, my biological parents didn't care enough about me to fight for me? And she's never exposed to that relationship and the love that her father has been fighting and willing to provide.
Well, and that leaves the one question for me as to how he was going to provide for this child's best interests. I mean, the concern right up to the end was not only the drug use, but the inability to care for the child by having a job and a place to live.
Yes, Your Honor. He is gainfully employed. He's been employed by the same employer doing detail service for cars for Mannheim Auction since 2013. Is that correct? So he's had a regular employment since then. He has the support of his family, including his mother.
Where he's living?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the state found that that was not an appropriate place for the child at the time. And so that hasn't changed.
He is currently living with his mother, although they both, you know, my client is a little bit older. He's a little bit more matured. He has learned how to take responsibility not only for himself but also for his child, which he wishes to do. He has the support of his mother, and they have made changes together so that they can provide a home and a loving, stable, clean, organized, you know, all of those in the environment conducive to raising a child.
All right. Counsel, thank you both for the briefs and the arguments in this case. This case will stand submitted, and the court will stand in recess until, I think, 1:30.